Welcome to episode 281 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I talk 49ers, cricket, and startup culture with 49ers Parag Marate.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who can't wait to meet up with listeners and friends in the USA, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan. Normally when I write intros like that, saying I can't wait to meet listeners and friends in the USA, it's a preview before I start traveling and heading to the USA. But I thought I would use that one because I am. I still can't wait, but I just don't know when I will be able to travel in the current conditions that the world is currently facing. But I do wish all of my friends in the US well with everything they're dealing with, as I do with everyone in the world, because we are all dealing with similar scenarios. As always, you can contact me via sportsgeekhq.com. You can use email, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com, or you can send me a tweet at Sean Callanan, or hit me up on LinkedIn. Before I jump in to today's episode with Parag Marate from the San Francisco 49ers, I just wanted to say thank you for everyone's support on the Sports Biz Zoom calls. It's been amazing to have over 600 people, people representing sports organizations in North America, in Canada, in South Africa, in France, in the UK, in Australia, New Zealand. I really do appreciate people taking the time and contributing with their opinion. Had some terrific discussions, and it's great now that if you do want to watch back either the same topic from another audience or other topics, you can do so via the Sports Geek Patreon. This week, we are talking ticketing in 2021. How many chicks can you get on the seats? How do you do planning for ticketing in the middle of a pandemic? How do you know how many people might turn up in 2021? It is a tough ask. The good thing is, as a group, I believe we can get through it. So those times again, Tuesday the 12th, 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, but that's about 12 p.m. CEST in Europe. And then Wednesdays, 10 a.m., which is about Tuesdays, which is Tuesdays, 5 p.m. PST for U.S. friends in North America. So a couple of really good episodes or topics coming up: millennials and sports, developing new fan bases, and really future, looking at the future in sports in 2030. So you can go and sign up and attend and contribute and be a part of the Sports Biz Zoom community by just simply going to sportsgeekhq.com/Zoom calls to secure your spot in the calls. And be ready. Be ready to share a book you're reading and to contribute to the conversation. I really do appreciate everyone who is coming on a regular basis and also the people that are coming in on as topic experts. I really do appreciate it. And one of the things I do appreciate very more, being very grateful, is the people who have supported the Patreon campaign. It's been really great as Sports Biz Zoom has grown that the support of the Patreon campaign has come on board, and it does help that they now can watch back or listen to the Sports Biz Zoom calls exclusively as a Patreon subscriber. Thank you very much to some people who have signed up over our recent break. Jim Durash, a longtime friend, signed up, and I really appreciate your support, Jim. Jeffrey Gabriel, thank you very much. Alex Howes, thank you very much for signing up. Lockie DiPiedomenico, really appreciate your support all the way from the UK. And David Hopkins and the team at Glory League for signing up as a silver supporter. Really do appreciate it, David and Grant. If you want to know more about Glory League, their logo is in the show notes. If you just go to sportsgeekhq.com/281, you'll find their logo for Glory League, and you can find out more about what Glory League do. Again, thank you for those people who have supported. If you would like to support us with our sports business content across Sports Geek News, our regular newsletter, Sports Geek podcast, which comes out regularly, the Q&A podcast, which have also just started firing up again, and also our Sports Biz Zoom calls, which are now available in replay as a patron supporter. You can do so as a personal supporter, or you can do it as a business, as Glory League did as well. So thank you again, sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. P-A-T-R-E-O-N is how you can sign up and support all the efforts we're doing in the sports business space. Now, I want to get into my chat with the San Francisco 49ers, president of 49ers Enterprise and EVP of football operations. Really pleased to have this chat with Parag Marate. Very happy to welcome Parag Marate, the president of the 49ers Enterprises and EVP of football operations at the 49ers. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
First of all, normally as I ask people, how did you get your start in sports?
Oh, man. So I had two different starts in sports. One was at a sports agency, IMG, and one was at the 49ers. So
yep.
I'll start with the first. I was in college and I watched that movie, Jerry Maguire, with Tom Cruise and Cuba Gooding.
Yep.
And I grew up playing sports my whole life. I played mostly baseball and soccer. And I realized after I saw that movie, I'm like, holy smokes, there's this whole other side of the business. You don't need to just become a professional athlete. There's the scouting side and the business side of it. And so I thought I wanted to be an agent. So I sent out at that time, this was late 90s, mid 90s. So I'm sending out a bunch of snail mail cover letters and resumes begging people to let me intern for them. All the sports agents that lived around Berkeley, San Francisco. I was an undergrad at Berkeley. IMG gave me a chance and I started as an intern for 3 years in college. And then and my start at the Niners came because after college I went into management consulting. And Bill Walsh, our old head coach and general manager, he was the GM at the time, hired the company I was working for to work on a project to study the draft. It was a little 3-month project. And I was the junior kid on the team. And I came over here for what was supposed to be a 3-month project. And here I am 20 years later.
And it is very much the story of a lot of people that I talk on the podcast of when they get their start in sport and where they end up. 20 years now at the San Francisco 49ers. That's obviously a variety of roles in that space, and part of them being in that football operations and really being early, now we call it Moneyball with Billy Beane, and everyone's seen the movie with Brad Pitt. What was the early football analytics space like?
It's a little bit of a misnomer that analytics weren't really being used or that analytics is some kind of a new thing. I think it just was maybe rebranded is probably a better way to put it, because people since the beginning, for certainly as long as I've been here, have been doing things such as scouting tendencies and looking at game plan and studying things like that. It's always been done. It was probably just under a different name. So for example, every football team has multiple quality control coaches and they call them quality control coaches and they're assistant coaches, but really that's all they're doing. Is spending their time studying game plan and strategy and what the other team's tendencies are. That's analytics.
But it also got some great PR and it was seen as success in potentially other sports. And, I think the Oakland A's and Moneyball pretty much got a lot of publicity, which would have made a lot of people go, oh, how can we do this? And we've seen a lot of other sports go, how can we do this in our sport? Which just put more focus on I guess, the data and the stats side of the game.
Yeah, that's true. And I think probably what's changed, the big fundamental thing, is both on and off the field or on and off the pitch. And that is that these professional sports teams are no longer run as lemonade stands. They're no longer just about the football team or the baseball team or the soccer team or whatever it is. It's now run as a business, right? And as a big Fortune 50, Fortune 500 type of business. That means you need to get as much value as you can and minimizing risk as much as you can, both on the field with players and also in the business. And I think that's what you're seeing is, every sports organization is now building up their own business analytics. Sometimes they call it business intelligence, sometimes business strategy, sometimes business operations, but it's the same thing. And you're basically just trying to maximize your ROI and you're you there's been a big shift in teams sort of running more like businesses than they do just a sports club.
Was that and it was a big part of your role in the 49ers moving to Levi Stadium. Was that a big part of that transformation? Not to say, you know, the 49ers were a lemonade stand when they were back at Candlestick Park, but was moving to a new facility and all the facilities in the precinct around that really that the 49ers leveling up?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the name of the game for any sports team is to have yourself a sustainable stadium or arena that you can play in that generates enough that you can support the team you want, a competitive team on the field. And that was all of our focus, for the 7 or 8 years that I was president and COO of the team itself. That's all our focus was figuring out where to build a stadium, how to build it, how to finance it, how to sell it, and all of that. And yeah, we did transition from a $3 billion, $2 billion lemonade stand to a sort of more of a sports entertainment company. It was actually part of the birth of 49ers Enterprises was because what we decided to do is go about our hiring a little bit differently. At that time, we hired most of our C-level executives who are here today, as well as most of our EVPs or VPs. And what we did is we just flipped a fundamental hiring practice kind of upside down. Since the beginning of time in the sports industry, people hired other sports people who maybe had a little bit of business experience, but the primary trait was, hey, you worked in that sport or in this sport, and like success or failure didn't matter, but you just had sports experience. We took the other approach. As we were hiring, we said, hold on, let's go get really good, sound business people. And by the way, if they happen to have sports experience, then great, but not a prerequisite. In the end, we ended up hiring, as we grew from, I think, 70 people to 300 people, we ended up hiring a lot of talented individuals of all colors and genders as well, because we tried to do it as much of a meritocracy as we could. And that's what enabled us to transition and actually be able to do all these other things that we still do today.
So how tough, change is always tough. And sports notoriously is, this is how we've always done things. And if you're bringing in people that have worked in different parts, different businesses, you know, whether they're in Silicon Valley or different parts of businesses, and they're coming at it from another direction, so this is how we've always driven it. How did you meld those two? Because that change would have been hard.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I had sort of already done it within the football side of the business, which is the sporting side is always a little bit more high profile, and so you know, I never played NFL. I never played college football. I didn't play high school football. Right? I love this game, but I played other sports. And so I was an outsider's outsider coming into the football world and started to negotiate player contracts and manage the salary cap. And I fought my way through it, you know, fought my way through years of criticism and things like that. And so kind of having that mentality, it has less profile on the business side. And so trying to bring just really talented people along and helping show that, you know, within a couple of days, you can make a good business decision that earns the company more money, which in turn gets you better players. Like if you can prove value right away, then it doesn't matter what your background is or what color you are.
And it really is just a culture decision to say, this is how we want to do things at the 49ers. We're embracing change.
And we were at the point where at that time, we had been trying for two decades, trying to find a place to build a new stadium. And we had done it. We have been unsuccessful to date. We actually needed to think a little bit differently in how we were going to do this in the environment that in the state and the area that we play in. And so that's, it required a different kind of thinking.
And so that decision and finding the space, breaking the ground, opening Levi Stadium, you mentioned it before that it led to 49ers Enterprises, right? Which is what you are president of. What's the remit of 49ers Enterprises? What's the goal of it?
So, the goal, we're really trying to, as we transition from lemonade stand to sports entertainment company, we're trying to use our resources, our people, our brand, our innovative mindset, and probably fifth, our blueprint that we've built and playbook that we've built, and apply it to grow, to build value in other places. And that was sort of the mandate after we built Levi's and after we hosted Super Bowl 50. Our owner Jed York and I just decided, you know what, we could do more. We have so many talented people. We don't want to let them leave.
Yep.
We want to continue to intellectually challenge them with new challenges and inspire them to do bigger and different things that they hadn't done before. So FortiAir's Enterprises, that's how we sort of formed it. We focus in four areas. The first is investing in other properties and teams. And so Leeds United is an example of that. Second area is kind of back to my consulting roots, is doing some management strategy consulting with different properties, leagues, enterprises, clubs, things like that. So we did some work with Sacramento Republic, the team there that just got the recent MLS yep. award. We're doing some work with USA Cricket and Major League Cricket, our effort to bring cricket here. So different things like that. Third is we've incubated our own businesses. So we built our own companies, like one around sports technology with Venue Next, one with as a sales agency with a couple other partners with Elevate Sports Ventures, which Al Guido is in charge of and does yep. a fantastic job. And then fourth is just based on our geography, like I said earlier, where we are, we're right here in Silicon Valley.
Yep.
We have so much access to academia, venture capital, everything. And frankly, sports is cool. So people want to be around the Niners. And so we formed a baby venture capital arm where we've now made about 50 or 60 investments over the last 5 years in young Series A seed stage companies, not even necessarily in sports, but all across. Just if we see a good idea that we think is a good idea, we'll throw a little support and resources behind it and see if we can help seed a business.
So it is a bit of a melding of what some of the big European clubs have done, where they expand and acquire other teams and all become under an umbrella, but also what Silicon Valley is doing and, you know, what it is, the culture of that is effectively putting bets on different companies and seeing which exactly. ones will flourish.
And we've got so many great people here and we want to keep them here. And the only way to keep them here is to continue to grow and build.
So you mentioned Leeds United. First of all, congratulations on the recent promotion to the Premier League. So how did the discussions there of 49ers Enterprises looking for acquiring and in the end gaining a minority stake in Leeds United?
You know, we were looking at European football for a little while. I actually, before, I want to say 4 years, 5 years before we invested in Leeds, I had identified Leeds as a club that was just ready to really blossom. Obviously, they are a storied franchise, one that just fell on hard times and what, a dozen ownership groups in the last 25 years or whatever it might be. But the brand power was always there.
Yep.
And the old Leeds and Man United matches are things of historical significance in UK sport. And so we actually first identified it and first reached out in, I want to say, either 2013 or maybe it was 2012 to try and do a strategic partnership of a kind of business practice sharing. We actually did some PR around it, but nothing necessarily materialized. Then through a mutual friend a year or two later, I actually met Andrea Radrizzani, the majority owner. And at the time he had nothing to do with Leeds. It was just we spent a day together here. I showed him Levi's Stadium and we formed a personal kinship. And we just got along great. And it was probably a year after that or 6 months after that that he went and acquired Leeds. And I reached out and said, hey, wait a second. This is a club that we've long admired. We'd like to be a part of it. And, you know, the rest is history.
So what have you learned? You're now on the board of directors at Leeds. What have you learned about, I guess, the scene there and Leeds and how football clubs are run in the UK compared to the US?
You know, first of all, like overarching, there are so many similarities. I mean, just from how to run a business. And we've done a lot of business practice sharing. We've gone over there. I go there every 5 or 6 weeks for multiple days, along with my colleague, Colin Meador, and our owner, Jed York. We spent a lot of time there. We brought them over. We've hosted them for 49er games and playoff games. In fact, hosted them at the Super Bowl, just so they get a taste and a flavor for how it works. And there's a lot of things we could do to help them increase fan experience and, you know, on and off the pitch. But I'd say the two big aha moments for me was I know that just take NFL football fanhood and passion is through the roof, unlike yep. anything else in the US.
Yep.
When I first stepped into Ellen Road for just a regular, it might have been a derby. It might not even have been a Yorkshire match. It might have been something else. It was just a regular match on a Tuesday night. and the amount of fervor and energy and I don't even, you know, I don't know what better word to use other than just magic in the air for their team was something that really captivated me. And it was just special. It's just, it's at a different level. The amount of passion that fans and supporters have for their football team. It's not just their fans of the team. It's their team. They own the team. They're part of the team. It's part of the fabric of who they are. That's different. Yeah. And that's pretty powerful. The other thing I'd say is that it's a global marketplace. So football is played all around the world. You know, obviously the most popular sport in the world. That makes it harder, more complicated to find the right players and for your team because you are now have a global source of locations to find players of all ages, right? And it's harder to find, like, you shouldn't just fish from one pond or two ponds or even 10 ponds. There are thousands of ponds that you can fish from to find the best players for your squad. And figuring out how to be most efficient and, I guess, cost efficient and time efficient to get the best players for your team, that's something I'm still learning.
Yeah, yeah. That tribal nature of UK sport is... And again, it's not diminishing, you know, 49ers fans, NFL fans, like they're just as tribal, but it does feel like it is at another level and it's really part of like an identity as part of their fans. So I think it will be interesting to see how you can tap into that and then also see some of the opportunities globally. You mentioned briefly there you're chair of USA Cricket. How did you find yourself in the world of cricket?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I didn't know too much about the game, but I guess I have the benefit of being one of the sole South Asian American sports executives here in the U.S. And so the ICC reached out to me about wanting to be a part of this. And, you know, I started with, I guess, maybe just even a cursory interest in doing it. But then as I spent a little bit more time, I realized, wait a second. Here is the second largest sport in the world with almost no real true presence in the largest media market in the world here in the U.S. If I'm looking at this with my venture capital hat, that all that says to me is opportunity, right? Yep. Investment opportunity. And so that's when I started really diving into it. I remember looking at some stats of, so when T20 World Cups are played, wherever they're played in Europe or in Australia or wherever they happen to be hosted, you know, it's the middle of the night here in San Francisco or wee hours in the morning in New York. And yet I look at some of the stats of the number of millions of people who are paying on pay-per-view to watch a T20 World Cup, you know, India, Australia, or England, New Zealand, like the most recent one, and see those stats and then that they're paying for it and they wake up in the middle of the night. Just because of the immigrant population, the expat population here, boy, that tells me that there's a real opportunity to build a sustainable T20 league here. You know, if we do it the right way and with the right investor group, and that's where I got excited about it. And I've learned a lot more about the sport since I joined this a couple of years ago. And it's just one of those opportunities where I don't know much about it, and I'm learning a lot more with each day. But here is something that maybe I can help seed something and build something that not just outlasts my career, but probably outlasts my lifetime if we're successful at this. And that's pretty exciting.
Definitely. I mean, we're definitely seeing all the Silicon Valley platforms trying to get into India. And cricket is, you know, the number one sport, almost a religion in cricket. And actually, the T20 World Cup was actually the last sports event I went to before COVID hit.
Oh, really?
I was luckily enough to be with, I think, nearly 90,000 people at the MCG, I think about 6 days before the NBA shut down. So it was very lucky, and that was the last time I've actually been to a sports event so far this year, which leads us to the topic of COVID. How is your team, from a football operations point of view, planning for the season ahead? You know, I have to use the word unprecedented because you have to have every conversation starting with unprecedented in these times. What are some of the plans that you've been trying to put in place to get ready for the season?
You know, the NFL has done a great job with setting league protocols for how we do things. And that's been, they've done a really nice job, obviously, in working with the NFLPA as well with that. I mean, we are doing things like I have it before I come to work every morning. In the parking lot, there's a bunch of people from a third party company in hazmat suits and a trailer, and I take a COVID test and yep. I do the temperature check. And I got to make sure I continue to be not positive before I come in. I walk around with this that I have to wear. Oh, I don't actually know why it's red right now. It shouldn't be. That's too bad. But this is supposed to blink with a red light anytime I am within 6 feet of anybody.
Okay.
And if I'm within 6 feet over 10 minutes, that's a problem. An alarm goes off and it's managed by the league. And so in all seriousness, my red light is blinking. I wonder if it thinks that you're 6 feet from me. But
just because I'm in lockdown, like I'm happy to send you a medical certificate. I'm all clear.
I don't know what this means, but anyway, so they're doing a great job with the protocols. And then obviously at a team level, the leaders of our football organization, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, have done a tremendous job of sort of organizing our training camp in a way where we are trying to make sure that we keep as healthy as possible.
And from, again, going back to that point of a culture of change and embracing change very much for the season ahead, there's got to be a lot of, you have to be agile, you have to change things up because you don't know what the season's going to be and how people are going to prepare. So that pretty much been pushed through the organization to get the season through.
I mean, there's a new component now to winning. Before it was about the best talent, fewest injuries, best luck, best coaching staff. Now it's also who doesn't get COVID, who has the fewest cases of COVID.
Yep.
And so that's a whole new component.
Well, I look forward. I hope the season gets away, and hopefully see football on our screens soon. Before I wrap up, just want to go through the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
You know, I was so my family never. They never. My parents never took me to a game as a kid. I think they just thought it was a waste of money, and they just. Indian American parents, immigrant parents, they just didn't want to waste money. I barely went to movie theaters. So I'm not even sure I remember one. So we didn't do that, but I remember on the back of I don't know if you remember Big League Chew. It was a type of yep. shredded bubble gum
yep.
That I got at Big League in the snack shack after baseball games. And I won like four tickets to an Oakland A's game. And I remember I had a few of my buddies and my neighbor. My neighbor's dad, my parents didn't go, took us. And we went early for batting practice over at the Oakland Coliseum. I think I might have been like 8 years old, 9 years old.
Terrific, terrific. You would have been to a lot of sports events in your time. Is there a go-to food or a favorite food memory at a sports event that you have?
Favorite food memory is probably my first time being at a Leeds United match before I was on the board, but just like when we were first scouting
yep.
and looking at places, and that whole halftime meal where you sit in the same area pregame, halftime, and post match with the other team's board, and you're literally 6 feet, if not less, or fewer feet away from your counterpart. And counterparts. Yep. That's strange. That never yep. happens in the U.S. sport. And it was such an awkward thing. Now I'm used to it.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of the way it's done. And it's good etiquette and everything, but it was just a brand new thing for me to experience when I first.
Effectively like the president's, you're at the president's or the chairman's dinner at halftime effectively.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Terrific. Terrific. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Probably either Twitter or Google News.
Okay.
One of those, just to get my source of information.
Terrific. Is there someone that you suggest the podcast listeners should follow, whether it's an author or an executive you think's doing well and why?
So you asked sports executives, so I'll answer this for sports executives. So I yep. personally listen to the Daily podcast. It's a little 30-minute podcast done by the New York Times on
yep.
whatever pertinent current issue is of the day. And I do it for a reason. And this is more about, as a sports executive, and you know, with me involved in multiple sports, it's so easy to get caught up in the time warp that is sports, and you think nothing else is going around you yep. in the world because all that matters is sports. And that's so far from the truth. And like, this is probably the first time. This is the first time that I can remember where finally there's a little bit of intersection between sports and the rest of the world because of COVID, right? Yep. We're forced to think about it. Before, it was always just the great escape. And so I always found it very helpful for me and beneficial to just do something non-sports so I could give myself some perspective and maybe be a little more learned than just being caught up in that time warp that is sports and sports only.
Definitely. And the thing is, you're right, and you can't use, there's so many words you can't use now. We would have said, oh, we're in our sports bubble, but bubble means something else now in the world of sports. But I completely agree. Looking outside and seeing what other industries are doing, and I guess that's part of what you're doing in your role at 49ers Enterprises, seeing what other businesses and that are doing, because they can then come back and apply. Last but not least, what social media platform is your MVP? What's your go-to platform?
You know, I only recently became an Instagram convert, and only mainly because we've got 2 and 4 year old daughters, and it's a great vehicle for me to share pictures with all the grandparents and all the cousins and uncles and aunts all around. So that's probably I'm not a big social media guy, but that's been a nice way for me to allow, especially family who can't see my kids right now, to be able to experience kind of them growing up.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. All the best finding out what that red light is blinking for.
Stop blinking, so I guess you're safe again.
It's not blinking. Apologies. He was just talking to someone in Melbourne. It's all fine. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and best of luck for the season ahead. And again, congratulations for Leeds United.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for the time.
We'd love your support on our Patreon campaign. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon.
Thanks again to Parag Marate. Please connect with him on LinkedIn. As I said, I do hope that the NFL season gets away and the 49ers have a successful season. Thank you very much to Roger Hacker for setting up the interview. He also set up my interview with Al Guido, who Parag mentioned. You can check the links for that in the show notes. For my Do This Today advice, it's try a service that I've tried over the lockdown period. It's Lunch Club. And Lunch Club is effectively a tool that connects people with similar interests for a date. So it started as a product in LA and San Francisco, and it was effectively booking a lunch date, effectively a blind date with someone that might have an interest in a similar business or technology or field that you work in. And so you sign up and say, I'm interested in digital and sports and technology and gaming and esports, and it would match you with someone and say, go and meet for lunch. They made the obvious pivot during COVID to virtual only and to be using Google Meet and Zoom. And it sort of accidentally went global. And being an early adopter of cool technology and especially networking, I love networking, I love connecting with people. I spotted it on Twitter and signed up. And since then, I think I've had 20, 25, 26 different meetings with a variety of people in the technology space, media space, gaming, some esports people, some agency people, and I've really enjoyed it. Obviously, COVID has taken away the ability to network and go to conferences, which is why I was sort of drawn to something like Lunch Club, and obviously why I've started and pivoted SportsBiz Zoom to the Zoom platform myself. So I found it really useful. It's invite only. This link should work. I'll put it in the show notes. But if you go to SeanCallinan.com/lunchclub, that effectively should invite you from me. If that does not work, just send me an email or a DM, and I'm more than happy to invite you. I've really enjoyed it. Met some quality people, had some follow-up introductions from those people. So if you're missing networking and connecting with people, please go check out Lunch Club. Before I wrap up, a couple of calls to action from what I'm doing. If your team needs some work and needs a jolt, needs some help on a project, on a concept, planning out a platform, planning out the next year, you can do so via a 2-hour Pick My Brain session. We pick the topic, dive in, and start getting stuck on the work. Happy to book them. I'm really looking forward to a couple that I've got booked that I've been talking to with people on the Sports Biz Zoom calls. They've been really good. Great way to engage a team, fire them up for the week ahead and get them really fired up around what they're trying to do in the digital space. Or it could be working with your commercial team to help them better understand how they can sell digital. So there's a few different options there. Happy to have a call to discuss how you might use it, but it's been really effective for a few different clients. Also, if you are a sports technology provider, please reach out. Ask me about Sports Geek Amplify. It's a content series that we're building for four sports technology providers to the space. We're effectively calling it a sports technology marketing accelerator. We're going to build some really good content. It's going to be in podcast form. I'm going to quiz and probe and understand your product in my interview. So my listeners, you will know what the best products are to potentially be using and investigating when you're ready to do so, coming out of the current period we're doing. So if you want to be part of that and have your product reach the Sports Geek audience, please reach out about Sports Geek Amplify. Hopefully we'll see you on a future Sports Biz Zoom calls. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Zoom calls. And remember, if you want to have a chat and see how I can help you, my goal in 2020 still remains executing big things. And to do that, I need to work on big problems. So if you've got big problems, let's chat. I want to help you solve them. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call. Book it in. Let's have a chat. Figure out how we can help solve it for you. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join Sports Geek Nation, access to exclusive Slack and Facebook groups with regular Q&A sessions with Sean Callanan. Go to sportsgeeknation.com to join. Got a question for Sean? Send it in for our Sports Geek Q&A series. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/questions. Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.